the Three Things podcast, the reboot. Man, it's been a long time. Few years. If there's anybody out there still listening, Mom, I am at it again. And man, I can't thank you enough for your patience. If you are a longtime listener and you're back, went through some stuff. In fact, I'm going to talk about it today and three things about a reboot. You know, those of you who know me know that I have a complicated past. I think interesting, but complicated includes preaching, includes faith, things that I have gone through some transition with, and many of you have dealt with the same thing, maybe part of why you're listening. Man, I love this podcast thing. Not my podcast. I love the podcast idea. Especially during the pandemic. Gosh, since I've last been on Three Things and recorded, we like shut down the world. The US government didn't know what to do, so they gave us a bunch of money, or some money, not a bunch, enough for us all to go out and buy a big screen TV or something. And then all of a sudden, we took our masks off and we just went back to living. And in the midst of that, we just had this moment of like, who are we? What are we doing? I think it changed things forever, or at least, I hope forever. Some of the things that were changed during the pandemic, I think, are really important. The way that we see work, the way that we see the option to work at home, the way we see our families. It began to uncover some things in my life that I needed to make a change in. And part of the reason for my silence, I think, with this podcast, I went through a time where I didn't feel like I had anything to say. To be honest, I'm still not sure if I do, but I have felt since I was about 15 years old, 14 years old, that I was a preacher. And I'll unpack that a little bit, but the idea of a preacher to me was somebody who had something to say that wanted to move people to something. My grandfather was a preacher. My dad, both grandfathers, actually, uncles. My mom, just people who have always been able to use words to move people to something. The thing that I did when I turned 15 was associated preaching, and I got all kinds of opportunities, even at the age 15, to stand in front of audiences and bore them and confuse them with terrible sermons at the time and these talks that I gave in front of audiences. But I began to, over the next 15, 20 years of my life, I never saw anything else really, other than preaching. And I intertwined the concept of preaching with my faith, which you can understand why. And I felt like I had to believe a certain thing, think a certain way, utter certain phrases. You know, if you've grew up in a church or in a religious association of any way, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And so as my faith began to shift, as I began to unpack some of the things that I am so grateful for that I grew up with, but things that I began to realize weren't working for me anymore, I also began to shed the concept of being a preacher. Because my faith and my preaching were so entwined, when my faith began to shake, so did my preaching. Which is, I think, why it's been so long since I've done this podcast. And it's only been in recently with a book that I've read that I want to tell you about today, that I began to realize I'm still a preacher. In the midst of my beliefs changing, in the midst of things being altered in the way I see the world, I have never quit the passion. I've never never stopped being someone who wants to stand in front of a group of people or sit in front of a microphone and use emotion, use phrases, use planning and creativity and words to move people to something. You know, I think about education or learning information, teaching as something different than preaching. When I think about teaching, I think of about, I think about someone who is informing me of something, which is so useful and so incredible. My parents were both teachers. My dad is, mom and dad both. I actually had my dad in class in high school, and is one of the, when I think teacher, I think of my dad. Just unbelievable at making me not only learn something I didn't know, but want to learn something I didn't know. But it's very much an imparting of knowledge. I know this, and I'm going to deliver it in a way so that you know this when I'm done. That is a fantastic teacher. That is not what I am. It's not what I do. I think the difference between a teacher and a preacher is that a preacher says, we know the same things. I'm probably not going to tell you anything you don't already know. What I'm going to try to do is remind you of the things that you care about most, and maybe some things that you know or have known that you forgot. And then I'm going to use those memories to help you move something in yourself that makes you more of what you want to be. To me, that's what a preacher is. It is now, anyway. I think as I have evolved in that way, I've realized that the podcast is a part of my pulpit, if you will. It's the part of my, it's part of my platform for being able to move people. I got so many nice notes from so many of you, some of you saying, where are you at? Some of you saying, take your time. Some of you a little frustrated that I just kind of stopped, recording this podcast, and I totally understand that. But for the most part, everybody has been really patient with my, silence. And I think just recently I got a Facebook message, like on Messenger, which I don't even use anymore. I don't even log into Facebook. It just happened to still be on my phone, and Messenger popped up. And it was someone that I don't know very well, but actually I don't think I know them at all. But Lisa, from somewhere in Arizona near Phoenix, sent me a note and just said, take your time, but come back. Would you reboot the three things? And I don't know why it hit me. So many people that I've known and been close to have asked me to, and it didn't hit me like Lisa did. So Lisa, if you're listening, thank you for that. It hit me that it's not that I have information to impart. It's that I do think that I was born with a fire in my belly to move people, to help people move themselves from wherever they are to wherever, just a little closer to where they want to be. So I'm back. I'm rebooting. And I want to do three things about a reboot today. To tell you, kind of just be honest about where I've been, maybe find some common ground with you, where you may be now or where you have been, and tell you about a book I read that has really helped me think differently about the evolution of my life, of my personality, of being who I want to be. So these three things today begin with, it's okay. And it's funny, I have, one of the things I've battled in the last few years is anxiety and depression. I think mostly anxiety. Depression only has hit me a couple times in the midst of that, but it's taken me some time to figure out exactly what my brain chemistry needs, what medication I needed, what routine of therapy and psychiatric evaluation and those kinds of things I needed. And I feel as healthy as ever. I have just enough medication. I'm on Lexapro. I'm taking just enough medication that I can get energy to exercise and eat right and think differently and record a podcast, which is exactly the right amount for me. Anything more and I would feel sort of in a daze, and anything less and I don't have energy. I don't have the mental energy to get through the anxiety. So I'm so grateful for that. But in the midst of that, I have a phrase that my counselor has helped me with that, honestly, it's as simple a phrase as it can get. And the phrase is just, it's okay. It's okay. And I say it in my brain. It's actually, when I say it out loud, it almost feels weird because I say it so often in my own brain. But the idea of it's okay for me saying that reminds me that I have something primal going on inside my brain, that fight or flight has for some reason taken over the more modern part of my brain that's evolved. And that fight or flight is basically saying you're in trouble. You are just like a caveman with a saber-toothed tiger chasing him or whatever it is. He has got to do something to protect himself, because he's either he's in trouble in some way. And so you either fight, you stand and you use your spear against the saber-toothed tiger, or you run. And that's what anxiety does to me. It stops all of my thinking in the primitive part of my brain. And so with a little bit of Lexapro and a little bit of therapy, I've come up with this phrase, very simple, it's okay. And what it does for me is it gives me just enough nudge to remind the caveman in me that I'm not fighting a saber-toothed tiger, that I am not at risk, that this next phone call I'm about to have with this person who may be a little hard to deal with is not going to kill me, and that I am okay. And so my three things today for the reboot begin with it's okay. And if this resonates with you at all, I'm hoping that maybe that phrase helps you in some way. The first thing about a reboot that I want to cover is it's okay to stop. It's okay to stop. It's okay to take a break, to sit back. It's okay to not go to the party. It's okay to say you're tired and leave the party early. It's okay to drive separately so you can leave when you want. It's okay to tell someone you're not okay, and to stop. There is this persistent voice in my head that is constantly trying to push me to do things quicker, to move faster. I use the phrase all the time, I'm going to microwave that. We know exactly what happens when you microwave something. It's soggy and it's not as good as it would be if you took the time to put it in the oven, right? I mean, that's what a microwave is. It's like this quick thing. And for some reason, my brain wants to microwave everything. If I'm not careful, if I don't stop, if I don't say it's okay to stop and take a moment to step away, I end up, everything gets soggy and tastes like leftovers. It's just not the way it's intended to be. And so part of what I'm learning is that it's okay to stop. It's okay to protect myself. It's okay to stop recording this podcast. I'm not going to apologize for taking a few years off. And that's a hard thing for me, to acknowledge that it's okay for me to stop. And maybe it's something you need to acknowledge, that when it comes time for a reboot, when it comes time for a moment for you to think differently about something, that the first thing you need to do is stop. One of my favorite comedians is Mike Birbiglia. Oh my gosh, I love Mike Birbiglia. He has a podcast called Working It Out with Mike Birbiglia. Love that show. Something you got to check out. If you haven't seen the new one podcast special on Netflix, you need to check it out. It's called The New One. His latest special is called The Old Man in the Pool. He's a storyteller, amazing storyteller with just this twist of a little bit of a feel good moment. There's almost a little preaching in there. But he says something that I think about a lot. He said that when he stops, and he's a really busy person too, and he has the same voice in his head that I have in mine, when he takes a moment to stop, what it does is he realizes that he can see his story. He's a storyteller. I love story. I'm trying to become better at telling stories. I love movies. I love anything that kind of gets me into a story mode. But he said when he takes a moment and stops, he sees his life like a story that's unfolding. And when he is allowed to stop and see his life that way, it allows him to look down and encourage the main character to make better decisions. And I think this is what the reason I put this into the three things about a reboot today is that stopping isn't just about taking a break, although that's an important thing. It's not just about getting energy to keep moving forward. It's about seeing your life as a story. It's about stopping for a minute to see the broader context of what's going on in your life and then going, could I encourage the main character to make better decisions? Is there anything that I need to tell the main character, me, in my own story that will help me move forward to get me where I'm going? So three things about a reboot. The first one is it's okay to stop. Second one is it's okay to start again. It's okay to try to try something, to move forward and to go do something without fully being prepared. Case in point, I'm recording a podcast today. I feel like I'm prepared, but I also feel a little anxious. It's okay to just go. I think the thing that keeps me from starting, from writing the book I've been wanting to write, I've got a book that I'm getting encouraged to write. I'm getting opportunity to write. I'm getting lots of encouragement to write this new book. What I'm not getting is like the guts right now. And that's the part that comes from me. And I'm working hard at this, but I think of Eckhart Tolle. If you haven't heard Eckhart Tolle, just look his name up. He's everywhere, more bigger than cat videos on YouTube. Just look at him up. He says nothing has ever happened in the past or the future. It's only happened in the now. Give me a second to live with that for a second. Nothing has ever happened in the past or will ever happen in the future. It has only happened in the now. So even the good and the bad things that happened in the past, now, as you see it, in the moment, it was now. And so we can't live with either regret or anxiety. For me, what happens when I want to start something, when I want to do something different, whether it's a project, Risha and I just did this big project. I feel pretty comfortable with like infrastructure things with lumber. I'm terrible with finishing. It just looks like somebody who doesn't know what he was doing was the carpenter on this one. And that's because I'm that person and I don't. So we had this project that's like the centerpiece of our living room. And Risha wanted to do this. She gave me encouragement that we could do it together. Fortunately, she's really much better at I am at these things. But my only thought was how dumb I am and how bad I've done in the past, how poorly I've pulled off this kind of thing in the past, which is that regret in me. When I look back, I live in regret. I go, yeah, I remember that thing I built that I ended up tearing down and I spent all that money on and it was ugly. When I look forward, when I look like past right now, I just become overwhelmed with anxiety. So if I'm living in the past, I'm living in regret. If I'm living in the future, I'm living in anxiety. The only time I have found the sustainable contentment is when I take Eckhart Tolle at his word. Tolle, I think is how you say his name. I say it different every time. That the only thing that has ever really happened is in the now. And when I can choose now, when I can look outside on a Saturday afternoon and hear my daughter upstairs laughing at a Netflix show, and I hear my son playing video games, and Risha and I are drinking a cup of coffee, and the dog is sitting next to us, and the snow's coming down. This was recent. My tendency is to either regret something or be anxious about something, to either look back or to look forward. But I have found contentment, sustainable contentment, in the discipline of the now. And when I find that contentment, I get this energy to go, to move forward. I still have to continually hold myself back from being anxious about what's next, but that energy to write a book, that energy to record a podcast, that energy that you need to do whatever it is that you need to do next, that you know the deepest part of who you are you need to do next, that comes not from looking back or even from looking forward, but from living in the now. That's where you're going to get that. It's okay to stop. It's okay to take that moment to live now. And it's okay to start again. It's okay to start again with this energy, and with even some ambiguity, is what brings us the creativity, the energy to move forward. And then finally, it's okay to stand on the past and reach higher. So this is so confusing in my brain, and it's starting to get more clear as I live it than it is as I say it. But you know, I look back, without living in the past, without regret, without, that like churn in my stomach for a mistake I made or something stupid I did. And I can see it as a place to stand, to reach what's in the future without that anxiety. If I live in the now, I can see this opportunity, to reach higher. I was telling Reese the other day, about some of the toys that I grew up with. And it's just so funny because I look around our house, you know, I live in the log home that I grew up in. And my son, his bedroom is literally the bedroom I grew up in. And his toys or the things that he does and the things he plays with are so different than the things I played with. And they're so much better, you know, and I was telling him about taking G.I. Joe guys and putting firecrackers in their hands and throw them in the front yard. I was telling him about lawn darts. Those of you who are of a certain age will remember lawn darts, these big pointy, heavy things that you throw way up in the air and inevitably end up playing dodge with your friends with, incredibly dangerous things. Telling him about one year, I believe I was 10 years old. I think I was in fifth grade. And for Christmas, my mom and dad bought me a chemistry set, which was awesome. And it was amazing, but I was like melting things in the garage. Like it was incredibly dangerous. I had a wood burner. We used to have BB gun fights in the front yard. My friend Andy still has a little place in his head where he got shot with a BB. I'm telling you, we did some really stupid things. Things have gotten better. We're standing on better stuff now. We're standing on the past going, things are better. I know some of you are going to go, yeah, wish we could go back to lawn darts. I wish we could go back. And that nostalgia brings us back there. But the truth is, evolution is good. It is moving us forward. And being able to stand on the past and reach forward feels really good. I mentioned, and I'm halfway through this podcast already, I haven't even done it. I mentioned that there was a book that has sort of really propelled me towards living now, besides the Eckhart Tolle, it's this book by Brian McLaren. And Brian is a former preacher. I think he may still preach a little bit. Church guy from a long time ago, which is why I resonated with him. Many of you know my story. I've stepped away from organized church, but he wrote a book called Faith After Doubt. And it just the title alone kind of turned me off originally, but I had a friend turn me back onto it. And I'm really, really glad that they did. A book you ought to pick up. He's a good reader. I listened to it on Audible. Really, really good reader. So it's one of those that you can pick up on Audible and get a lot out of. But he talks about these stages of your life development. Everybody goes through something different. I totally understand that. But man, did I resonate with these. And I wondered if you might too. As I think about the reboot in my life, the opportunity to move forward, you know, I grew up with this sense, it was a big deal in the 80s and 90s. I think people still talk about it now, where people like to use the analogy that your life goes through seasons. And I've always thought it was a romantic notion that I would go through seasons, that there would be a sense of like winter in my life where things would die, and then there would become a spring where things would be reborn, and then sort of a summer and a fall. And I resonate with it. I think it's romantic, but in the long run, it feels cyclical to me. It feels like I don't want to keep going through the winter and the spring and the fall and the summer all the time in my life. And one of the things that McLaren did that really resonated with me is that he took that analogy of seasons, and instead of considering seasons, he talks about these stages of life that we go through, which to me feels more linear. It feels like I'm moving somewhere. I'm not just trying to get through another winter knowing that I got another one coming. And I know that's semantics, and if seasons works for you, great. To me, the stages make so much sense. And he starts with these stages, these four stages. And I just want to go through them quickly for you today and kind of see if there's anything that resonates with you the way it did me. And if it does, I'm hoping you pick up his book and run through it. He says that there are four stages. Okay. So the first stage is simplicity. It's usually the beginning of our life. And sometimes it's in a rebirth of our life, but it's the simplicity stage is when we begin to see everything as either good or bad. We think of this sort of hopefully objectively as dualistic thinking. It's part of the reason movies work, right? Star Wars, you got good versus evil everywhere. You got Luke and Darth Vader everywhere. In all of our movies, at the simplest form, you kind of have a good and bad. Even in the Hallmark movies, you got the good guy who, you know, is nice and simple. And then you've got the bad guy who is the big city guy. And, you know, however you want to put it, our storytelling is often driven by this simplicity of good and bad. And all of the stories we begin to make up in our own heads and all of the ways that we live our life, we begin to try to categorize things with either good or bad. And this is really important as we're young, to create this sense of right and wrong, to create this sense of dualistic thinking. But there comes a point in your life where it stops working. Now, I don't want to get political. I don't want to get judgmental in any way. That's not what this is about. But you all know people who never make it past that stage. This simplistic thinking of like everything's either this or that. I remember I took my kids to see Hamilton for the first time. And the thing that struck them most is that there wasn't a hero in that story, really. Like, you can't say Hamilton was good and you can't say he was bad. The truth is he was both. And in that moment, it was this great opportunity to teach my kids and hopefully start to move them into the next stage of their life. That yes, there are good things pretty objectively and there are bad things pretty objectively, but most things, in fact, especially people, are more complex than that. They're neither good nor bad. They're kind of both. So that first stage is simplicity, where we like to put things in good or bad boxes. And it comes with some comfort. It comes with some contentment of being able to put things in boxes. But it also creates this sense of tension, because in the second stage, you get complexity. The idea of complexity is, oh, this doesn't actually play out this way in real life. I thought my mom and dad were in the good category, but then I saw this happen and I realized dad's not all good. So what does that mean? We begin to question authority at this time. We become more independent. We become more pragmatic. And this is also the time in our lives where we get coaches, people, mentors, people to come into our life. If this is the most important time in your life, as you're growing up, to have someone in your life who cares deeply about you. For my wife, it was her youth minister, somebody at church who just loved her and who loved teenagers. And he really poured into her during this complexity time in her life. And this is such an important time to jump in with your kids. This is where my kids are right now. I think London is a little past that. She's a senior in high school. And Reese is still developing this as well. Both kids are in, my job is sort of not, it is to ask the question a lot. And I feel like I say this to my kids all the time. Really? Like that thing you just said about people like this. Really? Did you mean that? You just made an overarching statement about people. Is that really what you mean? Is that really true? Every time my kids say something that like tries to categorize a human or categorize something as good or bad, I often just say the word, really? Think about that for a second. Is that really true? Or is that the stage one in you that wants to categorize everything? The coach's job during this is to help you realize that life isn't as simple as you wish it was or as you learned that it was all of the time. Interesting, when I think about these two phases, I think, you know, the first phase, I found religion. I was young. My parents were obviously deeply Christian, and I grew up with this sense of Christianity, this sense of following Jesus Christ. That became a really important part of my life early. And in that stage one, I began to categorize, this is either a Christian thing or a not Christian thing. If you grew up like I did, you know exactly what I'm talking about. That included music, that included dress, that included people, and included what you listened to, what you watched, how you talked, all of those things. These words are good. These words are bad. These movies are good. These movies are bad. And you begin to create that simplicity. In that simplicity, I found religion and Jesus. In complexity, I found Michael Jackson. I found art. And I remember specifically the day I listened to Michael Jackson and I put on that white glove. This is before everything came out about his lifestyle or what some people believe his lifestyle might be. But he was singing about love. He was singing about sex. He was dancing in ways that traditionally weren't Christian in my mind, were in the good or bad category. And I began to feel art and I began to think he was cool and want to wear the white glove. And I remember the moment when I bought my first parachute pants, or I got them for my birthday. And I remembered that sense of torn where I kind of felt like I was supposed to not like Michael Jackson, but I really did. And it took coaches in my life. It took people in my life to help me see the things that were actually true, and that things weren't actually as black and white. That's funny. That was a Michael Jackson song. As yes and no, as good and bad, as I had learned they were. So those coaches in my life, my parents were involved, my youth ministers were involved, my teachers were involved, a couple of friendships that I had were involved in helping me move from stage one, which is simplicity, to stage two, which McLaren calls complexity. I love this stage for my kids. I think this is a formative part for my kids. But that leads to this third stage, which McLaren calls perplexity. And the idea of perplexity is that you were creating some clarity with the first two stages. You were categorizing things, and then maybe things got a little bit more complex. But the truth is you started to realize and understand who you are. And with perplexity, you may hear the phrase recently that people are unbuilding their faith, or they're deconstructing their faith. That is how McLaren talks about perplexity. This concept of waves of sort of confusion, maybe questioning things you grew up with, maybe starting to rethink and rebuild. You know, it reminds me of one of my favorite quotes. Teresa of Avila said, I know less than I did when I was your age. I think that about my daughter all the time. I know less than I did when I was your age. And I just think about like what it feels like to get older and know less. The more I know, the more I realize I don't really know. And with that comes some freedom. It comes some realization, but it also with that comes some introspection, I guess is a good word, although it's not quite as strong as I feel. This is why I became so quiet in the last few years. End of 2019, 2020, 2021. This has been the stage of perplexity for me. I've gone into this moment of what do I really believe? What do I really believe is most important? What should I be doing? Why am I here? All of those questions. The thing about this stage that I'm realizing is I need it. This ambiguity, this perplexity is what is going to take me closer to who I want to be. And McLaren calls that the fourth stage, which he refers to as harmony. I see glimpses of harmony, that fourth stage. It's like I jump on the platform and then I'm back. That non-dual seeing is what McLaren calls the harmony stage. This sense of, I don't need to categorize anything. I don't need to call you good or bad. In fact, I don't even need to think of categories at all. The complexity in my life becomes replaced by contentment and by even the perplexity, that sense of undoing some things. The idea of harmony is that I become content because I am living in the tension between simplicity, complexity, and perplexity. That I don't need to resolve this tension that everything should be the way I want it to be. I see it coming. I feel it at times. I see it in the people who mean the most to me. I see it in my mom and my dad. I see it in people who are in front of me. My friend Darren, who is, you know, a few years older than me, who is going, has gone through stages like this. And I begin to see what it might feel like to be in this fourth stage. McLaren says harmony leads to wonder, hope, and imagination. When I think about writing a book, which I is my next big endeavor, I think I've never felt like I had something to say that I wanted to put out there into the world. And I think the reason I'm starting to change my mind on that is not because I have something profound to say. It's because I realize we all have something profound to say. And that being flirting with stage four in my life has opened my imagination. Maybe part of it is living now. Part of it is getting with the help of Lexapro and some really smart clinical people, being able to live now instead of live in yesterday or tomorrow. My imagination has opened up. My hope, my wonder, has starting to become more clear. So McLaren says, I'm going to close this up, but McLaren says that after each of these like stages, you have a yard sale. I love this thought. But at the end of each of these stages, you have a yard sale. You know what a yard sale is. I mean, I don't mean just the concept of a yard sale. I mean, you know what happens when you have a yard sale. You get rid of the crap that's been sitting around. You get rid of the things that you didn't like to see, but you kind of got used to them anyway. You got rid of the warped Tupperware lids. You got rid of the old set of golf clubs that you couldn't part with, but you haven't played with in 4 years. You got rid of that old cabinet, whatever it is that has been sitting around cluttering up. You finally say someone else's turn with this. And the idea of a yard sale after each of these stages is that you begin to look around and go, what needs to go? what needs to go to make room for new things? Because if you just keep collecting stuff in these stages, you end up with clutter. You end up with so much junk, so much baggage, whatever you want to call it, whatever analogy you use that makes sense for you, that you can't move clearly into harmony. And so for me, it meant having a yard sale. Part of that yard sale for me was being able to shake loose some of the spiritual conversations that I had, you know, that needed to go. It meant some beliefs needed to go. It meant some regrets needed to go. It meant a few behaviors needed to go. And I'm still trying to get rid of some of them. If I'm still going to keep the garage sale analogy, it's like somebody buys it and then brings it back. But everything that I've accumulated that I wish I hadn't, I'm realizing I have the opportunity to sell in a garage sale. And if I want to move to the next stage unencumbered, I have to get rid of some crap. You can fill in the blank to what it might be for you. But after each of these stages, we have this yard sale. You get to keep what you learned, and you get to throw away the stuff that doesn't belong. The dualistic thinking that causes racism, that causes chauvinism, the complexity that causes like this sarcasm that isn't really funny. It's more just dark and nihilistic. In that complexity and perplexity, you become, if you're not careful, pessimistic, and nihilistic, and you get to get rid of that. You get to sell that in a garage sale so that you can make room for harmony. You can make room for optimism. And you can make room for seeing the world differently. Jeez, welcome back. I can't promise what I'm going to keep doing, and I don't even know if anybody's listening to this, but it's good for me. I hope that you heard something today that helps you reboot. It's okay to stop. It's okay to start again, and it's okay to stand on the things on the last stage that you were on. It's okay to stand on the stage and move to the next one. It's okay to have a yard sale, to get rid of the stuff that doesn't belong and move forward. Friends, thanks for listening today. May you choose to live now, to not be caught in regret and not be consumed with anxiety for what's next, but to live now. And may you come back next time for the Three Things Podcast. See you then.